Welcome to the Mostly Pile of Night, Mostly. I am Graveyard, joined by my co-host, Salem.
Hello.
This is episode 153 of our weekly All Things Horde podcast. Cheesy music, fourth wall breaks, and rolling in the hay. Let's turn back time and go back to some of the classic horror comedies of yesteryear as we dive into The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, The Abominable Dr. Phibes, and, or Phoebes, however you want to say it, because they, you know, contents the entire movie as well. And of course, Young Frankenstein, the, I'd say, ultimate classic Mel Brooks movie from the 70s.
Yeah. You know, abominable is a hard word for me. I always get like tongue tied. It's like one of those tongue tied words. It's just a word, but it's like I can never remember how it quite works out. I'm like, I usually just go abominable or some, or abominable, or whatever. I don't.
Oh yeah,
never comes out correct.
Hey, you know, I was practicing. I'm not gonna lie, because I get tongue tied really easily as well. So
I was too, honestly. I was like abominable. Okay, good. Young Frankenstein. I've seen a lot of times. I guess I never realized how old it was.
Mm-hmm.
I had assumed it was an '80s movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I saw it was in the '80s. I guess I assumed it was like new then. I didn't realize it was 74.
Yeah, it's, you know, 51 years old. And
yeah, no, it's just older than I thought it was. I was like, 74, really?
Yeah,
but like, I think I made a comment last week where I said like, oh yeah, one's, you know, not quite as old, but it's in black and white, so we'll just pretend like it is. And it actually is. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's my fault for being out of touch.
Oh yeah, I've watched Young Frankenstein 50 plus times.
Okay. Well, I was going to go into this story later, but we'll go into it now. Yeah. You know, I have this like theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
That all women have like three or four movies that they're obsessed with and they rewatch constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but it's like, you know, whatever they're going to bed or whatever they're feeling bad or whatever, you know, stuff like that, they always turn on the same like three or four movies.
Yeah.
And in my experience anyway, all of the women, all of their movie lists contain at least one Mel Brooks film, which is interesting to me. Like one of them was Blazing Saddles, one of them was Young Frankenstein, and one of them was Spaceballs.
Ooh.
Which is odd, right? But but I've seen all of those movies a ridiculous amount of times because of that. Because, you know, if you're like, you know, dating a partner for a long period of time and they obsessively watch certain movies, you, of course, because you're near them, obsessively watch those movies just by, you know, being around them. So it's, yeah, I've seen them many, many, many times. But I don't remember the last time I sat down to watch it from beginning to end,
huh,
with the intent of completing the film. Like sitting down and watching it, like I've seen parts of it, or like, you know, halfway asleep and stuff like that, so many times. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those films, it's like I don't remember the last time I sat down to watch it just to watch it.
Well, yeah, that's fair. I love this movie to no end, so.
Well, yeah, it's great. But yeah, that's my yeah, women in movies theory.
Yes.
Just right, the ones that I've known and I've had experiences with. But I think it's a universal truth.
I would say my wife's most watched Mel Brooks movie is probably Dracula Dead and Loving.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, see, I think they all have different Mel Brooks movies that they're obsessed with. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not all Mel Brooks films. It's just one. There's three other movies and then one Mel Brooks movie.
Yep.
So yeah, it's not. It wasn't one person I knew that watched all of those. No. All those movies were different people.
Yeah.
That I spent significant time with. So, Todd.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get into the first one, which is The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, which I'll say right now, I don't think I ever watched.
I know I never have. It's one of those, I've heard about it. I knew it existed. You know, like I knew Don Knotts was in like this horror comedy. Mm-hmm. From the 60s, I knew about it. I never watched it. I never cared to.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a pretty short explanation because it's the horror aspect is really, really short.
Right. The horror aspect is done in like the first 30 minutes of the film, or 40 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah. So essentially we have Don Knotts, and he is a typist. So essentially other people write the stories and he types it out for the newspaper. Right. And so he's trying to be a reporter himself and do all this stuff. So we introduce him driving down the street, and then a guy gets bashed in the head of the thing. So on the screen, murder, murder. And then he, you know, takes pictures of the guy, he takes pictures of the 2x4 that hit him. And then the woman proceeds to go on a rant for 10 minutes about how she saw him get hit in the head many different ways. Like, I think she says it at least 10 different ways. And
driving the point home.
Yeah, she is. So he brings it back and like, oh, I witnessed a murder. Oh, wait, no, the guy's okay. Yeah, we're fine. And then he's talking to, I don't even know what to call him, the janitor, the maintenance guy of the newspaper.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, just like your typical old man hanger on.
Yeah, and he's talking about like this, you know, there's this house that 20 years ago, tomorrow, let's say, is that, you know, it was a murder-suicide, essentially. You know, garden shears to his wife's neck, and he's dead. And, you know, there's always talks of, you know, at midnight, you hear screams, you hear the organ playing, and that'd be a really great story. And so Don Knotts goes, you know what? Let me talk to the people in charge. It's like, yeah, I'm going to spend the night there and report back to it. Like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You just get too scared. So, you know, he has the side story of this woman that he loves that he has to eat soup standing up because apparently booths in 1966 only hold one person per side. And just, you know, comedic effect, right? And kind of this love story that they have. So anyway, he goes to this haunted house. And he, you know, immediately climbs into the sleeping bag. There's some Scooby-Doo-esque shenanigans that happen of the door not opening and closing, kind of like Three Stooges haunted house type stuff as well. And he goes there and, you know, he throws a book at a bookcase because there's sounds going on there. He opens up a secret passage and gets to an organ that starts playing by itself. So he gets pretty freaked out there. He goes, runs down the stairs, which, you know, the secret bookcase seems only one flight of stairs versus like the three he took down to get back to the main floor.
To be fair, he did leave by a different door.
That's true. And so, you know, he also, in like the painting of the woman, has like, you know, shears in her neck and it's bleeding. So he runs out and then prints the story.
Now, here's the funny part, right? They make a very specific point of saying it's gardening shears.
Yes.
And the old man in the scene right before this says, I used to be the gardener there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even I, who usually don't try to figure out things ahead of time, could see that coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the plot twist is not that plot twisty. So anyway, he goes and writes a story. Well, the, you know, they're trying to tear it down, and there's, you know, the 60s version of the, you know, rich woman that have seances and all that stuff, you know, the Rachel group, right? The paranormal, whatever. They're like, oh, this place is haunted. We have to do this. We can't tear it down. But the nephew of the people who own the house, he wants to tear it down for a reason. But he's like, hey, this is, you know, slander, this isn't really happening, you can't do this. So he sues Don Knotts, and then turns into a procedural courtroom scene that's
right,
the rest of the movie hard veer from that. And, you know, they go to court and they have witnesses and testimonies about how crazy Don Knotts' character was, that he had, you know, too big of shoes, he always made up stories, and there's a guy that believed him that heard piano and organ and stuff like that. But yeah, I also, you know, we met on Mars for our meeting about UFO and aliens and all that stuff. Like, okay, these witnesses are not good. But anyway, the judge goes, you know what, jury and people, let's all go to the house at midnight and see what happens. Well, lo and behold, everyone's there, about 15, 20 people there. And all the things that happened, that Don Knotts said happened, didn't happen. Midnight happens and he starts to leave. And as he's leaving, all of a sudden he hears you know, the organ playing as his maybe girlfriend is in the house as well. He goes in there, and lo and behold, it's the old maintenance guy that was the gardener that was playing the organ. He's like, yeah, I did this. You know, I did it remotely. I played all this stuff. I just want you to get you here. And turns out it's all elaborate ruse to get the nephew of the people that died to confess to the crime that he did 20 years ago, that he murdered his aunt and uncle for the money and stuff like that. And it took 20 years for the guy to set this up. And lo and behold, yeah, he gets, you know, captured. And yeah, he did it. He confessed to it. And Don Knotts marries his girl. And the organ in the church starts playing randomly the same song. That's the movie. yeah, like I said, I had never seen this. And I was not expecting it to be that short of a haunted house movie.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be something else. I'm like, okay, is he going to go back there? No.
No.
And they only go back there at the very end with everybody else.
And, you know, two spooky things happen, and that's it.
Yep.
Yeah. This is interesting. So I expected it to be at least three quarters of the movie to be that. But I'll go with my highlights. The wacky, zany music actually fits this movie. Because it's Don Knotts. Don Knotts is a character for sure, right? And we always talk about, you know, the misplaced music that's wacky like this, but it actually fits with this movie because it's not really meant to be taken seriously. And I think the music portrays that pretty well. I think Don Knotts did an amazing job on this. You know, he plays that almost Jimmy Stewart-like character, but with Three Stooges-esque escapades pretty well. That's kind of his shtick, right? And it's interesting in 1966 that, you know, he was saying he's in a practice of karate, that his body is a weapon. He tries it, fails miserably at it, but it's just a joke that we see still in comedies today, that my body is a weapon and a karate and stuff like that. But it's interesting to see him do that in 1966. I don't know when mainstream karate came to be, but I feel like this was before it. You know more about that than I do.
I don't know when it became mainstream. I know that I think a lot of the resurgence happened from World War II, because there was a lot of service members stationed in Japan that trained in it and then brought it back. So I know that it started in, you know, the post-war period. So I mean, I guess this is a little after the post-war period. It's probably, you know, it had started ramping up at this, you know, about this point or a little before this.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, those are my highlights. How about yours?
You know, they don't really have like room and board houses anymore.
That you rent a room. Yeah. That's
right. Like, you just like rent a room, but then like the lady still like cleans and cooks for you and shit. And like, you like have breakfast with like everybody who lives in the house. Like, don't do that anymore. Well, not that I know of. I've never seen it. I guess it might be somewhere, but I, not a thing that they advertise anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don Knotts is, I guess he's like a, you know, like a master of physical comedy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially for this time period. Not really my thing, but I have to respect his craft, right? He is very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give him that. And then again, the ending is a very Scooby-Doo ending.
Oh, yes.
You know, like the only thing that was missing is they're pulling a mask off of the guy before he confesses. But like, essentially, it's the same thing. Like, they catch him and he just immediately confesses to the whole thing, even though it's like a judge is there.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, yeah, that's all I got for high point. Low points. Now, you said the music was good. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I will say it's extremely repetitive.
Oh, it is.
So, like, yeah, the music is good at first, but, like, when you hear it for, like, the 30th time, it's like, okay, like, can you pay someone else for another, like, 5 minutes of score, please?
Well, essentially what happened was the theme song to the movie is the organ playing song, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And now this guy was going to tear down the house, but, like, when they go in the house, dude, there's, like, furniture and books and like all kinds of like cool, like, you know, stuff that's probably worth a lot of money. Oh, like the guy, the other guy was talking like, oh, you could get all that woodwork and sell it. Like, yeah, that's if it's a bare house, but no, it's like fully furnished house. And he was just going to like bulldoze all that shit over. Like, it's worth a lot of money, man.
How much do you think the organ, the whole house organ was worth?
Right. So I said like that grandfather clock, dude, that thing was probably a ton of money.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like books being destroyed. So that upset me. That psychic ladies group was just stupid and annoying. You know, like they kept the little catchphrase. I don't even remember what it was. I just remember it was annoying.
And they touch it and then feel the electric.
Right. Yeah. Then like wiggling around and shit. I'm like, come on with this. And then like, you know, that court turn, you know, like left turn, right? Like we get the little bit of haunted house and then it's like, you know, oh, he's the hero of the town. Oh, he's being sued by the guy who owns the house. And they're like, what the hell is this movie? Like, I thought it was supposed to be a haunted house movie. It's like a courtroom drama now. But yeah, and I didn't appreciate that left turn, but that's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, not really ghosts, were there? For a ghost chicken.
No.
Yeah, poor Don Knotts. He, like, every time someone talked to him, they had a different, like, derogatory nickname for him. You know, that's just belittling him, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, yeah, in the beginning, and even through most of the movie, like, yeah, he's like a born, like, tragedy, right? He's the kind of person that, you know, even if you try not to make fun of, you still inadvertently do it anyway.
Right. Uh-huh. That electrician must have been a Democrat. Ha, 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 ha.
Wah, wah.
I know. You know, I like that, like, oh, they're having the COA luncheon or picnic, right? The guy that clearly looks homeless says, oh, you're not COA. Get out.
Yeah. Dude, he's already eaten. Let him finish his meal.
Yeah. As you said, the psychic core, called it, is awful. I know that's what rich women did that had nothing else to do, was enamored with the occult. But, like, they are, like, the worst time of the cult people.
Right.
That just, like, yeah, it's awful. And you talk about the Scooby. I didn't like the Scooby-Doo-ness-esque of this. It's not what I was expecting. And then going into the courtroom drama or courtroom thing, it's just, for being called the Ghost of Mr. Chicken, didn't really get that. I expected it to be at least 30 to 45 minutes of haunted house shenanigans.
Okay. Well, I was a Scooby-Doo kid. Okay. Mm. I grew up on Scooby-Doo. So I was introduced to Don Knotts through Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in other shows and movies until after I'd already grown out of the Scooby-Doo phase. So like, to me, Don Knotts being in a Scooby-Doo-esque thing makes complete sense. But I guess if you don't know Don Knotts from Scooby-Doo,
I know it from Scooby-Doo. I've never been a Scooby-Doo fan, so that's why it's on my list.
I mean, I'm not a Scooby-Doo fan now, but when I was a kid, I was a huge Scooby-Doo fan.
Yeah. But yeah, those are my low points. So our olives for this week are Random Lightning. This Random Lightning out of 10, just because, you know, one movie in particular has just the most random lightning. Well, not really random. You know when it's going to happen, I guess, right? <Rab-hoo-ha>. So, Salem, how many random lightning do you give the Ghost of Mr. Chicken from
1995? I don't know. I mean, it's okay. I mean, do I want to watch it again? No. Can I recommend it? Not really. But I mean, I don't hate it. I'll give it the five.
Five? That's
five cool. Random lightning out of 10.
Yeah, it's just something to watch once. If nothing else, just to see kind of like the, you know, this is what, maybe 15 years after, 16 years after, you know, Abbott, Costello meet all the monsters, right? So it's just kind of like a early foray into horror comedy. It is what it is, but I agree. I think it's five random lightnings out of 10 for sure. It's not something I need to watch again. But it's just an interesting piece of horror comedy history.
Right. It's a movie that I'm glad I finally watched, but I don't need to ever watch it again. Like, this is it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're gonna fast forward 5 years to 1971 for
the that Apollo. Feels like a hell. That's a like for being only 5 years, it's a hell of a gap.
Oh yeah, yeah. So take us through the Abominable Dr. Fives.
Abominable Dr. Fives. Okay, well, I guess the plot of this movie isn't really gonna take me a whole lot of time to tell you. this movie is more about like vibes and like spooky monologues. Right, I mean, like stuff like that, like just kind of harping on the theme of what we're going for here, and then like kind of bizarrely out of place police investigations, inept investigations, right? So essentially, what the story is there's a guy, his name's Dr. Fibes, he is abominable. But anyway, the I'll spoil the whole ending here just so we can lay the story out. His wife died. I don't know if they specify what she really died of, but whatever it was, she got sick or something and she was on the operating table and she died in surgery. And 9 people, most of them doctors, there's one nurse in there, were in the room and were there when it happened. And so Dr. Fives blames all of them for killing his wife. So he's going to take revenge on them. He himself wasn't even there. He was like, you know, across the, on the other side of the world, like touring, cause he was a big famous organist, you know, like organ and inventor. They say he's 2 things. Cause he was like a PhD. So that's why he's a doctor, but he's also an organist. Anyway, so he was trying to rush there as fast as he could. And he crashed his car and was burned and pronounced dead, but he lived. And then he went underground and then became like this kind of like, I guess, comic book villain, really, and just planned his revenge. Now, so there's 9 people that he's going to kill. So he decides to use the 10 plagues of the Old Testament. Right. Yep. And he's going to kill each person in the style of one of those plagues. So you get like the plague of locusts, you know, where he like makes a Brussels sprout spread, and pours it on, you know, the nurse, and then the locusts eat it off of her and then eat her flesh along with it. You know, there's the curse of bees. You know, there was like the guy that died of bee stings in his library, the curse of bats, he dropped bats into this guy's house and it ate him when he slept. The curse of hail. He like made this contraption that like super froze his car, so he like froze in the car. I mean, what are some of the other ones?
Okay, so we have
Blood one, where he like slowly drained all the blood into jars and then left them on the mantle. The last one was like the curse of the firstborn. He was gonna like kill the one dude's son if he didn't like operate on him and get a key out of his heart in time to like unlock him from this device so he didn't get burned with acid. It is as ridiculous as it sounds.
Yes.
And there is a lot of like weird musical dance scenes between the killings, where like there's costumes and a clockwork marionette band playing music, and they're again, it's like big, weird kind of dance numbers of Dr. Fibes and the girl. They don't really say who she is or why she's there, but she doesn't talk. Nope. He can talk, but he has to talk through like this wire that connects to like his neck.
Because he's a musical genius, so he's able to rig that up. Yes.
Right, yeah. So he was able to like somehow create a device that mimics his real voice. So like Vincent Price sounds like Vincent Price through a speaker.
Yep.
And the movie has a very 70s vibe to it, but it's supposed to take place in like the 30s.
Yes.
Which is very odd to me, but, yeah. So anyway, he kills the 9 people with all the plagues. And then the final plague, the 10th plague, is for himself. He ends up killing himself so that he can spend eternity with his dead wife.
Yes, the last one's Darkness.
Correct. So he like lock, he like embalms, automatically embalms himself, and then locks himself in a tomb, and then they can't find him. And then all alongside this is like there's a police investigation of them like trying to find out what's happening. They never get anywhere close.
No.
Oh yeah, that was another killing with the rats in the plane, and the plane crashes. But yeah, they never get close. They're like not even really like a step behind. I guess the plane, they were kind of a step behind the plane, but they were never a step behind Dr. Fives.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was always, his plan was never going to be derailed. So they do show up at the end, but again, his plan has already come to fruition by that point. And that's pretty much it. The movie ends with him killing himself and fulfilling his 10 plagues, and the cops get there and they're like, oh, I guess we missed it.
Yep.
That's it.
Live involves himself.
Right.
Seems awful.
Yeah. It seems like a terrible, terrible way to go. But I mean, I guess if you're that dedicated, go for it.
And it's a shame that he's dead because he does come back in The Return.
Right. Yeah. I didn't realize there was a sequel until I was, you know, I finished it. And it's like, you want to watch this? I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a sequel. Now, was this your first time watching this?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it before.
Okay.
It's another one of those movies that's been on my list for a very long time. A lot of people have told me I need to watch it, and it's like, yeah, I'll get there. And I just never have.
Yeah, I went through a Vincent Price phase of trying to watch it.
I did too. This one just didn't end up on the list. There's a lot of them, to be fair.
I mean, yes. Absolutely. There's absolutely a lot of them. But, you know, this movie is interesting. It's on people's lists for a multitude of reasons. It's classic Vincent Price, but without, he still has his monologues, but without his mouth moving.
Right. His throat moves, but his mouth does not move.
Yeah. And he's horribly disfigured and you know, all that stuff. Right.
Right.
So, do you want to do your highlights first?
Sure.
Okay.
The Dr. Fives Clockwork Wizards were super cool, right? That's like the marionette, like clockwork band. Obviously, people inside of like oversized pretend robot costumes, but they were great. They were fantastic, especially when they were playing music that obviously was not being played. Yeah. It was anywhere near. You can see like the piano guy just slamming his hands down, and then the drummer guy was going when there was no drums happening. It was it's great. It's a great time.
Clearly a musical master.
Right, yeah. I love that it was like the 70s vibe and style, right? Even though it's not supposed to be set in the 70s, it's supposed to be set in like 30s or something. But it is like 100% 70s vibes in this movie. I mean, like, he literally has, okay, like, he puts on a prosthetic face, right? And he has to wear a wig. But because it's the 70s, he also has prosthetic sideburns. He has to also stick out his face. I don't know how much more 70s you can get than that. That's not a 30s thing. That's a 70s thing. But I dig the vibe. It was fun. You know, like all the sets, those big elaborate weird sets. Like I said, there's these big elaborate dance numbers for no reason. It was all fun though. It was all a good time. I like that the unique deaths, right? Each doctor got his own unique deaths. The deaths started happening immediately.
Oh yeah.
Like we don't find out why they're being killed until I think like four deaths in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun, you know, and then the whole like, you know, wax statues of him, like, you know, marking, you know, that he took care of all the people. That was fun, too. And I love his the high 70s tech of his robot voice of just a big wire going to like a Victrola that could somehow project it to the entire building. But it was fun. I liked it. That's all I got.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vincent Price was spectacular as always, you know.
Yes,
he definitely does that. Okay, so I've been saying this. I'm sure other people have said that too. But the way this movie is, you can clearly see almost an inspiration of the movie Seven from this movie, and the biggest inspiration I think is Saw. I think Saw follows this formula. You know, I personally believe that the you know, the creator saw Dr. Fives, and I just go, he's like, I want to do that, but remake it.
Well, I think you can go back further. I would say like the Pit and the Pendulum would be further back.
Yeah.
That would be more apt. I mean, yeah, maybe it's like a ramp to them, but yeah, it's step on that staircase, sure.
Yeah, like I said, I just because the revenge of the wife's death, the elaborate plots. Yes, the Pit and Pendulum has that as well, but this is even the ending is very Saw-esque. because he wins.
He does. He completes his plan, and he never really gets even close to being caught. I guess the closest they get is they get there right before or right after his casket closes, but that's it.
But I mean, 1971, he wins, which is bizarre. At that point in time, movies were still, we got to have a happy ending, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's interesting that he did the seven plagues of Hebrew.
Ten
plagues of Hebrew, which is, like I said, interesting that he chose that, but you don't see many people that do that. But like I said, that's why I think that's partially inspired Seven to do the seven deadly sins. Like I said, and the kills are quite unique. I'm sure, some of them are gross for you, but some of them are just what did the frog mask do? It kept tightening until he bled out. It crushed his head.
I think it just crushed his neck.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Those are my highlights, my low points. As I said, he's clearly not playing the organ with the music that's being played.
What?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, he sold it, but don't show us your hands on the keys that are clearly not playing the notes being played. Man, hand crank porn would be awful.
That's on my list. I was like, man, this guy must be fucking desperate. Like he's got to keep one hand cranking this old timey porn. Man, that must have been a rough time for you to live in.
I know. It's the equivalent of having to hit the channel select button on the TV just to try to de-scramble it for a brief second. It's interesting that it becomes a crime movie with Scotland Yard and all that stuff. It's almost Jack the Ripper-esque as well, with them trying to figure out what's going on because they have zero clue.
Right. And then, once they do figure out what's going on, they're like, oh, we need to watch out for all these people. And then those people just go off and keep doing their own thing, even though they're supposed to be under protection.
And they still die.
It's hilariously, like I said, they're just completely inept. They just don't know how to do their jobs well.
Yeah. And when they're talking about their firstborn, I felt like it took them too long to realize that he's like, maybe he's talking about my firstborn. Oh, shit.
Yeah, considering there was only one child mentioned in the entire film.
Yeah, they're just sitting there like, oh, my brother's dead. Huh. Pause. I have a kid. Yeah, you do. You do. And if you want to show wealth, having multiple phones in the same room.
Right? One in your casket?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, how many phones do you need in one room? Oh, man, I'm making a drink. I can't walk the 10 feet over to answer the phone. I got to have a phone here while I'm making a drink.
Never underestimate lazy people, man.
I guess. And honestly, if he didn't do this, if he didn't call him up and set this up, he would never have even come close to being caught. In the slightest. And like I said, the taking the key out of someone's heart, like I said, that reminds me of the key thing in Saw.
Yeah, for sure.
So those are my low points. How about yours?
We already talked about the crank projector. Porn, I got that on mine. Yeah, I mean, just that the police investigation is just terrible. I mean, I guess they're there for mostly comedic effect or whatever, but they're just bad at their jobs. For being Scotland Yard, being as famous as they are, these guys must be the rejects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that embalming yourself, suicide, that, wow. That has to be one of the worst possible ways to go.
Oh, it seems awful.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I could have thought of something better than that, dude. Maybe he wanted to suffer at the end. I don't know. And again, we never get any kind of explanation on who that girl was. Like, nothing. It's like, is this a daughter? No. Like, they didn't say anything about him having kids or anything. Like, the wife is definitely dead. It's not like her. It's not like a reanimated body of her, because it's, you know, she dies separately. As I was sitting there thinking, like, are they ever going to mention this person?
Well, I think, you know, until you see the wife at the end, you thought maybe this is like someone who's going to do like implant her brain or something. Into
right.
Her.
That's what I thought. I thought it was like maybe it's like an automaton version of his wife's body. Like that would kind of make sense. But no, it's a different, totally different person.
Yep.
And she like dresses up in elaborate outfits and does like the dance routines with them and like helps them with the murders and stuff. So she's like totally on board with this. Mm-hmm. But they never say who she is or what. I guess they just needed somebody to help him.
Right.
And they just decided to keep it mysterious. But yeah, they never even mention casually who this person is or why she's there. She dies a horrible death, but nobody seems to really care. They're just like, okay, next.
She gets the acid on her, yeah.
Right, yeah. She like melts into a pool of goo and they're all like, oh, your kid's good, right? Let's go.
Yep.
That's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got. All right, so I'll go first for the, you know, random lightning out of 10. This is, like I said, this is an interesting movie. It's a, I'd say a classic that doesn't get a lot of talked about. Like, with all, like, all of Vincent Price's stuff, this is, it should be higher on the list, I feel, of things to talk about. I really enjoy this movie. I will give this 7.5 random lightning out of 10. How about you?
You know, I really liked it too. I think it's delightfully weird.
Mm-hmm.
In a time period where there wasn't a whole lot of that happening, right?
Yeah.
Especially in this genre. I thought it was great. All the bizarre dance scenes, like the goofy kills, like his weird monologues and stuff. I mean, there's just so much stuff that's just not explained at all. But it's just delightfully a weird way to present things. I really liked it. So I'm going to give it an 8.75.
Yeah, it's yeah. I don't know if I ever watched the sequel. I think that's going to be kind of a wrap up thing that we need to do at some point in time. Add it to our list because I want to see how it returns from being embalmed.
I had to look at the synopsis because I'm like, he's dead. I'm like, what are you talking about? And yeah, the synopsis is basically like somehow he returns. And then he's looking for magic scrolls to resurrect his dead wife.
Oh, perfect.
Like, so, that kind of defeats the entire purpose of the first film. Like, why didn't he start with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was just synopsis. I've never seen it. But yeah, we'll have to go through and put all the sequels we did either omitted or didn't want to include and just put them, like, we'll have a whole month of just bad sequels that nobody wanted.
Exactly.
I'm probably not going to enjoy that. No. But yeah, we can do that. I'm sure can. Yeah,
for sure. All right. So lastly, we have Young Frankenstein from 1974. And, you know, the plot is, I'd say your typical Frankenstein movie, but with Mel Brooks' twist, is essentially we are introduced to, you know, Frederick Frankenstein, played by just the ever charismatic Gene Wilder. Say this right now, he's made for this role.
Yeah, again, yeah, spoiler, that's like my first thing on the high side. And I even put a little plus next to it, but just because he's fantastic. Like, he's great.
Oh, yeah, that's on my highlight, too. But essentially, you know, he gets the will from his great-grandfather, Baron Frankenstein, because that's, he changed his name. But, you know, it's happening while he's teaching a class about the frontal cortex and all the pieces of the brain. And he goes there, he gets Igor as assistant, who's, you know, his grandfather was assistant to, you know, Gene Wilder's, you know, guy as well, which is Frau Bruja, who is the kind of the caretaker of the castle and seemingly ex-lover of his grandfather.
Frau Blücher?
Yeah. Played by the delightful Cloris Leachman. And we get Terry Garr as just his sexy assistant as well. And you know, he's going through there and he's like, okay, well, I found the secret library. I was able to figure this out and I think I can do it. So let's get a guy who's like 7 foot tall. And they just happen to have just a dead body of a guy they just hung that's about 7 feet tall. So they dig up his body. He sends Igor to go get a brain from a notable scientist and something else. I don't remember what's on the brain thing, but Igor gets scared of his, you know, reflection after lightning happens, drops the brain. So he gets the abnormal or abnormal brain, puts it in there. And then we get the classic of, you know, trying to do the, you know, raising the body to the lightning and get lightning struck, but it doesn't work. So anyway, he's kind of downtrodden by that. So they're all having dinner and dessert. And all of a sudden they realize that, you know, the monster is alive. And he's kind of just going through him and kind of just training him of how to kind of be part of society, right? He realizes that he's just a mindless creature at this point in time. And he realizes that he has like the brain of a child, but it's because it has the abnormal brain into it, right? So eventually, as all this is, you know, happening, the creature gets released and we have the classic scene of, you know, the little girl and the blind hermit, I guess. Would you call him a hermit?
Sure. I don't know.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, like I said, the classic Frankenstein scenes that are there, and the townspeople are getting up in arms. But as he's trying to do this, he realizes he's able to teach him simple commands. So of course, then what do? Well, you have a talent show with your creature of, you know, putting on the Ritz and kind of going through all that stuff. And then, you know, there's another kind of like explosion there. The monster freaks out because fire bad. And so he is able to kind of escape for the most part. But he's also, imprisoned. And, you know, Gene Wilder's character is engaged to Madeline Kane. And, you know, Madeline Kahn. I heard Kane for all the time. But anyway, so he, you know, likes his assistant. They end up having sex, but, you know, his fiance comes there. And so, you know, they're able to kind of go there. But like I said, the riot happens. Just like I said, all this stuff. And they're able to save the creature from the mob. And so, like, okay, so what do we do? How do we fix him? So they kind of go through I don't know if they ever say what they're actually doing to him, other than transferring some of his brain matter into the creature and vice versa,
I think what the ultimate, if, because they stopped the process before it ended.
Yeah.
So I think if the process went all the way through, I think he was sacrificing himself so that the creature could live a normal life. Mm-hmm. So I think if the, you know, the thing went all the way through and did its 15 minutes, I think he would have been dead and the monster would have been, you know, a normal person or have his level of intelligence.
Right. But it didn't. So, but we're able to get that the monster is able to have a seemingly normal conversation and ends up, you know, wedding Madeline Kahn and, you know, Gene Wilder and his assistant kind of live happily ever after. And that's it. Right.
Correct. They both traded things in the brain matter transfer.
Well, Gene Wilder got another thing instead too. The proportionate size.
Well, or maybe just the enthusiasm. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I said, I've watched this, like I said, at least 50 times. So it's interesting, you know, that we were able to actually sit down and review this, you know, and I couldn't tell you the first time I watched this. It was probably the 80s or early 90s. And I remember asking my parents when I watched it with them, what did Frankenstein get in return? And they didn't answer me. So I was curious. I'm like, okay, well, his intellect goes to the monster. I'm like, what did he get in return? And they refused to explain it to me because I was too young to understand what he got in return.
He got the Viagra.
Yeah, that he did. But, you know, do you remember your first time seeing this? And basically you don't watch this very often.
Well, I see it all the time. It's one of those movies you see parts and bits of, but again, sitting down to watch it beginning to end is, I don't remember the last time I did that. It's been a long, it's been years. I don't know, but I've seen bits and pieces of it. I mean, at least once a year. I mean, I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, first time seeing it was probably in the mid to late 80s at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching it and thinking it was older than it was because it was black and white. And I didn't quite grasp that it was, you know, just a kind of an homage to the older films,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I remember learning not too long after that it wasn't quite as old as it was. I think it was like when I found Spaceballs.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized it was the same thing. Yeah, but it's one of those, well, I don't know if you piece together all the bits and pieces of times that I've watched it, it's at least 100. I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Like I said, I had a long-term lady friend who watched it at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I would catch a piece of it once a week for years. So yeah, it's a lot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'll kind of go first with the highlights. You know, the one-liners. I think this movie is easily quotable in almost every line.
Well, that's Mel Brooks' humor in general. Like, Mel Brooks is just iconic humor. Like, they're timeless.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, even Gene Wilder playing the straight man, his lines are just as iconic. His delivery, and that's kind of going to him. It's perfect. He helped write the story, but, like, he made it his character. He had the craziness of the original Frankenstein, right, in the original movie. The madness, the craziness, he does it perfectly. And, you know, I think even with Marty Feldman playing Igor and the hump constantly moving, it's just it's a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor that is perfectly played up. You know, and to me, it is one of the perfect parodies of a horror movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is done right. This is done well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Dracula Didn't Love It is a fantastic parody as well. But this is his first one like that, and it's just like, this is... If you didn't know any better, you can easily think this is part of the Universal Monster Collection.
Oh, for sure. Like, when I was a kid and I watched it, I assumed it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned it shortly after that. But yeah, for a while, I believed it.
Yeah, like I said, every person is a character. You have the inspector with his, you know, multi-jointed fake arm, right? You have Cloris Leachman, you have Fred Bruja, and just the random lightning. You know, it's just everything about it is classic, that you can say one line from the movie and most people know exactly what you're talking about. Those are my highlights. How about yours?
Gene Wilder, of course, it's great. Again, Mel Brooks' humor. I mean, they're almost every line hits, right? You know, it's a lot of comedies you have hit or misses, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the good comedies are like more hits than misses. Like, this one is like almost all hits. I mean,
yeah.
There's very few times when there's no laugh at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just great. Even after watching it a million times, it's still just a great, great, you know, film. Now, I never noticed this before, but when I was watching the opening credits, they actually thank someone for giving them the original Frankenstein lab equipment. So, like,
yes.
The lab equipment that's in that lab, that's the original lab equipment from Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And you know, they even thank Mary Shelley with her full name, too, which is pretty cool.
Right, right. And again, I don't think I've, again, as many times as I've seen this movie, I don't think I quite put together that the blind guy was Gene Hackman. Like, Nope. I've seen that part 1,000 times. Mm. Never put together until right now. I was like, that's fucking Gene Hackman. Yep. I just thought it was some random blind guy. And then again, I guess it's just a list of things that I noticed this time is, instead of the bolts on his neck, he has a zipper on his neck. I know they even mentioned it one time, but I guess I just never really quite grasped that it was actually a zipper on his neck. And that's funny. It's a funny joke.
Oh yeah.
That's all for my high points. Low points. Did Peter Boyle ever have hair?
No.
I mean, this is 74. There's nothing. I mean, it's like squeaky bald. You know, there's not even a stray hairs in there. It's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. I think that the dance number is a little much. I mean, it doesn't really overstay its welcome, but like, I'd rather not.
Mm-hmm.
Why Frankenstein could be like engaged to be married to that woman, I have no idea. Like, she's like a terrible person.
Don't kiss me, don't touch my nails, don't touch right. my clothes.
Like, you're gonna be leaving for an unknown amount of time, but don't kiss me because I'm going to a party later. Like, what a terrible person. Mm-hmm. And her singing voice is just ear piercing.
Yes.
It only happens once, but it hurt me. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it. That's all I get.
Oh, yeah, the dance sequence, which is interesting because it's Mel Brooks. I mean, when was the producer? It's a couple years before this.
I don't know. I know he has dance things in like almost all of his films. Those are probably my least favorite parts.
I mean, Hobbs plays at Saddle's End.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
My least favorite
part. Madeline Kahn's, yes, singing voice is atrocious. And I don't know. I just with kind of going through this, all the fourth wall breaks that Igor does seem a bit excessive when reviewing it's like through our eyes now.
True.
He constantly is looking at the camera.
Yeah. Or maybe that was a joke of like, you don't know which eyes you're supposed to be looking at. I think that's just another level of joke.
It is. But honestly, that's about it. Like I said, it's an amazing movie. So how many random lightnings out of 10 do you give Young Frankenstein from 1974?
Oh, I go first. It's an iconic and it's classic. I mean, it's about as good as you get, right? So I'll do 9.375.
Yeah, I'm going 9.5 just because I don't think this is anything that could ever, go out of touch because, like I said, yes, this is probably taking place in, I don't know when it's taking place in because that college like that wasn't, that's a newer thing. So it could have been taking place in the 70s or even 60s at this point in time, but it doesn't matter because he's going to Transylvania. So it doesn't matter the time setting because it's that classic. I don't think this ever will get old because it fits into that almost a period piece at this point in time. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's timeless. And like I said, almost all of Mel Brooks's movies are timeless somehow.
Yeah.
It's like, no matter when you're watching it, like the jokes still connect. Like there's very few of them that don't. It's like very few of them are like pop culture jokes. They're just like basic life jokes somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's now over 50 years old. This is still fantastic as it was then. It's just a testament to what he's been able to do, and to, like I said, to the cast, to Gene Wilder, just nails it hands down. And it's almost like his audition tape was screaming for Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
yeah, for the creepy part of him scaring children in the ride. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, but. Yeah, he plays the perfect straight man. He's generally the straight man in a lot of his stuff too, isn't he?
He can be. Yeah, he's a lot of times the high energy straight man. Yeah,
but I think like Hear No Evil, See No Evil, right? With him and Richard Pryor.
Yeah,
Richard Pryor is clearly the more comedic one, but he still has his parts in it, and it just kind of like shows his testament of acting. He's able to portray and deliver the stuff, and then has that just crazy ass energy about him. So, all right, anything else to add to this episode?
No.
All right, well, let's go back to the future, or actually kind of a little back, you know, some newer stuff, but some contemporary horror comedies that we'll be looking at next. We went to the past, now we're here closer to current times. So whether it's two rednecks remodeling their vacation house, Possessed Hands, or Live Strings, horror comedies are kind of a dime a dozen, right? We talk about like how they do it well and how most people don't do it well. I'd say for every one good horror comedy, there's probably nine bad ones.
Well, I think the big problem with horror comedies, I don't want to get too far into this, but the big problem with horror comedies is that so many of them are just derivative, right? They rely on you already being a fan of the genre and having seen a lot of other films, especially the most popular films, right? And then they just kind of riff on that. Like, very few of them do original comedy.
Right.
That's why I chose these movies, because these have their own original thing. They're not riffing on something else or trying to parody something else. Most horror comedies do. These are just horror comedies that their own thing.
Yes. We will be looking at Isle of Hands, which unfortunately I heard is getting a remake.
I mean, everything's getting a fucking remake, dude. Everything.
I don't think Isle of Hands is remakeable now.
I haven't watched it in a while. I haven't seen it like since it came out.
It was the first VHS I turned in to disc replay and got the DVD of. And then Tuckerdale versus Evil, which is honestly has no right being as good as it is.
Correct. Yeah, it was. I was shocked. I was shocked at how good it was when I watched it.
Yeah, and then the one I haven't seen, Deadstream.
That one I have seen.
You have seen? Okay.
Yes.
It seems interesting enough, but yeah, that's what we have lined up. So I'm excited. I think good horror comedies that aren't cheesy, which these aren't, go a long way. So remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to. And this has been Graveyard saying, have you checked on the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.